When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, everybody. This is Tom Davis, who is the creator of the No Bad Dogs podcast, also host. Hello. I just wanted to switch it up from what I usually do. Anyway, this is an excellent podcast with a giant Great Dane who is super reactive. The dog owner is very kind, articulate, and knowledgeable about the problem, but just doesn't have a clear solution. And so this is an excellent podcast for anybody that's actually struggling with their dog and their reactivity, regardless of how big or small they may be. So we're going to get into this podcast. And at the end of the podcast, if you guys are listening to this and you have questions that you want me to answer, I can answer them. And I do. Every podcast, at the end, I answer three of your dog training questions. All you guys have to do is head over to the iTunes review chart, and in the review, leave your question, and I'll answer it at the end. So enjoy this podcast. Seattle, Washington area, and Porto, Portugal. I will be doing seminars, and all of the information is linked in the description. I can't wait to get out there, and I can't wait to meet you guys and hang out. Enjoy the podcast, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Talk to you at the end. What's going on?
So maybe just a little bit of backstory, a little bit of intro.
Sure.
My name is Phil. I live in Montreal, Quebec. And I am a proud parent of a 5.5-year-old Great Dane.
Cool.
Brody is my entire life. He weighs about 135 pounds, give or take. And I have had him since he was a puppy. Throughout our journey together, we've struggled with leash reactivity. And it's to the point where it's really starting to affect my mental health and just my overall happiness. It's not as freeing as I would like it to be. I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to go for long walks. I want to be able to be around people. But I recognize that that's not always the case. So that's what I'm struggling with. I have a list of just a couple topics and points. There's a couple things that I think I'd like to just kind of ramble off, if that's okay,
yeah.
Just to give you a little bit of a bigger picture.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, cool. So I work remotely, which has let me spend essentially all day, every day with him, which has been a godsend. No one else can walk Brody. And this, like I said before, it really prevents me from living life. I can't travel. No one's able to walk him. No one's able to watch him. So it's really limiting what I want to do in my life. He's okay with dogs that he knows and dogs that he's introduced to well. And even at that, he will try to play a little bit more aggressively. He is quite dominant. He'll stand over the dog. And I know that that's a sign of, I want to say, some sort of alpha mentality. But for example, I've been watching my brother's golden retriever, who is an absolute angel, mm-hmm. and they get along great. But sometimes when he gets a little too excited, I just kind of have to stand in front of him and let him know that there's boundaries. He wants to play, doesn't know his size. He's extremely leash reactive, like I mentioned. I actually purchased a prong collar off of your website probably about a year ago, and that's when I noticed the biggest improvement in our communication. I use a prong collar and a flat collar. And typically, when I see a dog in the distance, I will, on the turn of a dime, turn around and just avoid the situation altogether. I would say 30% of the time, if the dog is small and calm, I can walk by them with no issues. There's definitely interest, and he's definitely kind of beefing up a little bit. But it's when the dog is medium size, so anything above 40 pounds, he seems to hate black poodles and know that he's kind of building up and going to react. So I'll either turn around or try to avoid the situation altogether. He can walk very well, just loose leash beside me. I would say in a calm scenario when there's no dogs, he's great with people, very excited, doesn't know his size, gets into your personal space, but he's not reactive towards kids, not reactive to dog or to cars or anything like that. And he is, I'm really struggling, man. The other day, and the day that I actually booked this consult was, I was at my breaking point. I walked out my front door and there was a little wiener dog just walking across the street, and he nearly pulled me down my front set of steps as soon as that dog barked at him. And once he's fixated, I find it very, very difficult to get his attention back on me. Tried the flick of the wrist, but it just seems like almost nothing can snap him out of it. So I've watched probably dozens of hours of your videos over the past couple of days, and I'm just looking for some tips and tricks. I'm looking for next steps. I'm open to exploring an e-collar, which I saw a couple of your videos and it looked like there was great success there. The only other time that he reacts is if he sees a dog in either the window and he's not able to access them, or in a car when I drive past, he sees a dog, he'll lose his mind. I've tried a couple trainers locally in the past, but I felt like they were more just wanting to be friends with me and bring me for walks, and they didn't actually give me what I felt was tools needed to actually improve the situation. Tried scatter feeding, always have treats in my pocket, very positive with that. But like I said, sometimes it's just not enough to get him out of that mentality. So my goal is to be able to walk him, to live a healthy and happy life and be a little bit less restricted. And I guess the last thing that I'll mention, I was chatting with your team about coming up to or coming down to your facility for the 3-day program. But I wanted to chat with you first just to see if there's some tidbits that I can get out of a conversation with you before I commit to coming down to New York, just given the prices is a lot, but it's nothing that I am opposed to doing. So if at the end of this conversation we both think that that's something that I and my dog would benefit from, totally open to it. I think it's something that I would love to experience, but again, just looking to get some tips and tricks and maybe pick your brain on what I can do. Sorry, that was very long-winded.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's not really, considering, what you've been dealing with for the last. Now, did this, you've had him for five plus years. When did the reactivity start happening? When did you start seeing the reactivity?
So as a puppy, I would bring him to doggy daycare, and I think that that was one of the biggest mistakes that I made, because the people watching the dogs were 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids who had no care in the world. They let him do whatever he wanted, immediate access to any dog that entered the facility. And it got to a point where once he grew, they actually called me one day and they said, like, we can't continue to watch him. So I think that he started to dominate dogs there. I was working through it. We've kind of gone through our ups and downs, but I think that over COVID, I isolated myself quite a bit, and we saw dogs less frequently, out in the public less frequently. But as soon as everything opened back up, I feel like that's when things really started to get bad. So I would say over the past 3, 4 years, it's just hasn't been getting significantly worse than ever before, but it also hasn't been getting much better. I have a lot of dogs in my area, and I have a lot of kids in my area. And I mean, you can appreciate this, but having a 130-pound dog lunging towards a dog next to a kid in a stroller is not something that I'm comfortable with, and it makes me extremely embarrassed. But yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it does. So, and he certainly has the ability to coexist and even be friendly with other dogs that he's familiarized with. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
So that's good. So just to kind of dissect things, and I like to really dilute things down and isolate things. And so it sounds like it's classical leash reactivity. So it's not necessarily I want to kill dogs or I want to hurt dogs. We don't have a rap history of sending dogs to the vet and blood and things like that. And so when we talk about these types of behaviors, especially from a dog owning standpoint yourself, you're kind of like trying to figure out and wrap your head around why are these things happening? What is it? What is the cause? What are the triggers? What do we do? And so this is classical, likely leash reactivity, which is going to be a dog that is reactive on the leash, typically predicated from other dogs in their proximity and where they are to them. So if we see a dog from afar, we're alert, we are interested, but we're not reacting at that point. If we see a dog that's close, we will then react, right? So reaction and or any type of aggression that we may see, because we have to define that aggressiveness isn't always mean and it always isn't malicious, it's just aggressive, right? We're pulling, we're mounting, we're putting our heads on the other, we're pawing at the other dog. Anything your dog does to another dog is likely going to be aggressive because of his size. It's likely going to be intimidating because of his size for you and the other dog owner. So a reaction is essentially when two things kind of come together, right? So fire and water, there's a reaction if we add them, right? So your dog's out for a walk, like you just said with that wiener dog, you open the door. What the reaction was, your dog seeing the other dog, right? So that's a reactivity to that. So control has a lot to do with this type of reaction because oftentimes dogs will worsen their reactivity because they're not stopped initially, right? They're not corrected initially, which means like a correction is to eliminate a behavior from happening, to clarify what is right and wrong. So I find like with human behavior, it often happens, right? Where if we're not corrected the moment that we decide to make the initial bad decision, and it's not bad in a way of malicious intentions, it's bad in a way of safety, it could be bad in a way of harm, it could be bad in a way of a lot of things. It just means the person that's responsible for such human and or dog is responsible to correct behaviors that we want to eliminate from happening in the future for a handful of reasons. So oftentimes when you get bigger dogs, they tend to overpower human beings in the beginning, making it hard to correct. So at a physical stance, so there's emotional standpoints, there's a physical perspective as well. Obviously, 150-pound plus giant dog lunging, it's going to take a considerable, like a fast-moving car versus a paper airplane, it's going to can take a considerable amount of force to stop a car that is an airplane, right? Just throwing it out there as like an example, right? We get a huge dog and they are using their big, tall, long strength arms and they're lunging forward towards another animal. The physical aspect to stop that unwanted behavior is much harder than if it was a wiener dog, let's say, right? We can almost like hang on to them with two fingers and think it's cute, which is why oftentimes dog owners with big dogs, struggle a little bit harder because you do have that. And then there's the emotional response. And emotion is going to be tied with relationship too. So your relationship with your dog is tied to the emotional response of your dog reacting and or more importantly, how they react and respond to what you say when you want them to stop, right? So if he lunges forward and you say leave it or no, that is going to be something that he's either going to go, oh, sorry, my bad, excuse me, or he's not going to care. And it doesn't really matter the conversation of like, did he hear you or did he understand it? It doesn't matter. He didn't care about it. Like you saying deliberately with a corrective voice inflection, like leave it. It's not like leave it, buddy. It's like, don't do that. He doesn't care, right? So there's the physical aspect of, and it kind of goes down in the line, right? He doesn't care emotionally. His emotional response is to like, I don't care. And then because he's physically strong and in some regard more powerful than us, because he has leverage, he has four legs, he's tall, right? And we have this rope attached to him. It's like, so we lose at all angles there. So this is why these things start to happen, is my point. It starts to unravel, and then the dog, it kind of perpetuates and gets worse, or definitely doesn't get better, because the dog almost feels like, at some points, depending on your relationship with the dog, they feel like it's necessary to do, where they almost, some dogs can get insecure, and if you've watched any of my videos, which you have, you can see that. It's like clockwork, man. Literally, it's somebody comes in with a leash aggressive. I don't ever really care about the dog, and I don't mean care, I mean focus. Unless the dog has a bite history and is actively trying to hurt me, I typically am looking past the dog 90% of the time, maybe 95% of the time. So when we talk about dogs like yours who don't have this aggressive back history and has been neglected and abused, and we adopted this dog at 3 and has been burned with prods, we're not talking about that. We're talking about a dog that was raised by you that didn't go through any of those things, that has developed reactivity to other dogs we don't know. So what I always focus on is always try to counter condition this response, which is essentially changing the emotional response of the dog's reaction to another dog. Like our reaction to something we don't like, we're trying to change the response to it. And sometimes it's predicated off of the other dog's behavior, which is inevitably going to fail on our end because we can't lean on that because it's not in our control. So my point is there's a couple options that we try to work on leash reactivity. The first option is we try to counter condition the response, which is, I don't know in depth what you've done with these other trainers, but scatter feeding is helpful, but it's also a type of avoidance. So it doesn't really help the dog understand that the dog that they see has caused the feeding to happen, although you can do it if you're timely. But oftentimes what I find is the timing is off and we end up rewarding the dog for getting aggressive. Or your dog sees another dog, gets jacked up, we throw the food in the ground, they eat the food really quick, and then they just go right back to what they were doing.
That's what I find happens, is it's almost a frantic experience where he'll either look at me for the treat, and then I'll give it to him, I'll scatter feed, he'll go for it, but then immediately once he's done, he'll pop his head back up and frantically look for that dog to continue the buildup, or I guess the loading phase. That's what I've been experiencing.
And yeah.
I don't know if this is related, but very similarly, if on a normal walk, I praise him or say like, good heel, he'll look around frantically like, oh shit, it's where's the dog?
Yeah, it's a trigger. And that's what I was going to say is that you got to be careful about counter conditioning. As you know, I don't have to explain to you my style and my methodology because I really don't have anything. I just look at the dog that's in front of me and I work through problems as they present themselves, like a good chef would in the kitchen, right? Throw anything at me and I'll make it work. I'll make it taste good, you know? So anyway, I don't have a certain like, oh, we have to do this or we have to do that. My just experience over time is I use a little bit of everything to get the successful outcome that we need for the dog and the owner, period. I don't choose sides. It's just silly to me, to be honest. But when we counter condition, oftentimes that does happen because our timing is off and because the dog is that kind of points towards the trigger is more of a fearful reaction to the dog instead of a well, I'm bored, I'm just going to react, or I'm playful and I want to react, because we're trying to essentially counter another dog's presence with something of higher value, right? So let's say we're out with a dog, they see a dog, and we throw food on the ground, or we say heel, or we say come, the dog immediately goes, every time the handler does this, there's another dog. So you end up making it worse because now you verbally have cued it. You have cued that there's another dog. Therefore, the dog is like, oh shit, where is it? And they start working themselves up. And that's just a product of timing, really. And it's difficult for somebody who isn't a even professionals do this all the time. I see it all the time where they literally start verbally or even physically with their scatter feeding, cueing the dog that there's another dog and making things worse for the owner. So I take it even a step further than that, and I say, okay, and that's not going to work in this case. And cases that does work in my experience, just as a side note for you, is when the dog is reacting because they're overly stimulated and they want to go and play and they're excited to see other dogs. And the only reason why it works is because you're fighting reward-based stimulation, which, oh, there's a dog, I want to, oh, with reward-based food, right? So basically they see a cupcake and you give them two. And they're like, I'm going to stay here instead. And by the time the other dog passes or goes away, they're not interested because it's gone. And then you're like, oh, it worked. And it's like, sure, define work. Change the behavior? No. Blur it out for a moment? Yes. And again, I'm big on whatever works. But with your dog, that's just not going to work because that's likely not where it's coming from. It's probably coming from a state of fear because of the lack of socialization during that time of COVID and whatever, right? And older dogs typically will mentally develop a lot longer than a smaller dog. So their development and the maturity stages for them could be up to like 3, you know, whatever. Anyway, regardless. So what I try to do is I try to look at it with fear-based reactive dogs is you have to kind of clear the slate first before you can start developing a counter-conditioning response, which means we have to clear the cache first. We have to say, hey, let's start from a blank slate. Then I'm going to teach you. Then I want to show you how you should respond to this. And oftentimes that comes with correcting the behavior when it presents itself at an early stage to help the dog make a better decision. And it's timed with several other things. It's not just correct the dog and move on, although sure, that's happened before. But typically what ends up happening, what's your dog's name?
His name is Brody.
Brody, right. I knew another Brody, Great Dane. My buddy had a Brody. So we go out with Brody, and there's fundamentals that have to be in place first, and we can talk about that in a moment. I just want to go through my roadmap of traditionally how these things work. So there's fundamentals that have to happen first with anything in dog training. Fundamentals for stopping behaviors, fundamentals to advancing off-leash obedience, right? They just have to be there. You can't add a hot tub to a house that doesn't exist, right? You can't optimize something that is not existing, right? You don't have anything. There's nothing in front of me, right? You can't make anything better if it doesn't, if the foundation isn't there, right? So that's important to know. That's pretty much how all dog behavior gets better, is you have a foundation. What are we working with here? Like, oh my, and that's often, and I know that you're not at that point because you're investing a lot of time and energy into understanding what's going on, but some dog owners come in and they throw money at me and they say, fix the problem. And I go, you're wasting your money and your time because that's not how this works. It's like going to a personal trainer and say, make me skinny. It's like, that is not how this works, right? Or going to martial arts and saying, make me a black belt. And that's not how it works. You have to put in your time. You have to put in your effort. You have to put in a lot of homework in order to succeed in this, because ultimately you are the person that's going to be able to make this better. Could I take your dog and get them to not react or surrounded by 10 other dogs on the leash in less than 5 minutes? Sure. But a black belt could submit me in 5 seconds as well, because that's their job, right? Difference. So when we're out with a dog that has this reaction, we have to talk about the fundamentals. So I guess I will ask you this question right now. So how do you think your fundamental obedience is, which would include heel, leave it, sit, etc.?
So With no distractions, I'd say, given the scale, we're probably at a 75 or 80%. So in the house, he will leave it. He will not counter surf. I can throw high reward treats on the ground and get him to, I'll recall him and he'll walk right over the treats to me. He'll sit, he'll lay, he'll spin. He's very eager to please in that sense. But as soon as there's distractions, it seems like, is that a better option or can I get something more out of what's going on over there? So when I hit my breaking point at the end of last week, I made a point after watching a couple of your videos to start working on what I thought was that foundation. Picked up his Caranda bed, brought it outside in the front, got a long leash, and started just place, recall, sit, spin, come, heel, with no distractions, just in the driveway. And anytime I did see a dog in the distance, headed back inside because I know we're not there yet. So I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is that what you mean by the foundation? Just making sure that we have good line of communication, that he does listen in that sense?
Yes. When we start to, so there's obedient counter conditioning, right? So counter conditioning is in my, because that's the thing about dog training, it's extremely subjective. And so that's why I try to define things as I go, because everyone has different terms, right? Just like anybody else in any other field, right? Everything is pretty subjective in how we take things. So when I work with dogs and I try to use counter conditioning obedience to use obedience to counter a dog's response, not change their emotional response, but try to change the response and what they're doing physically. So let's just fast. So the answer is yes, but let's just say you worked on place in your bed out front and you worked on it for a week and it's great. And then you start amping up distractions, the 3 Ds, distance, distraction, and duration, right? So you're doing it for 10 minutes at a time. Your dog's just snoozing. Great. You're moving away all the way to the end of the leash, on a 20-foot long line, and you're doing great. And then you start adding distractions, right? You're throwing balls and you're hiding yourself. You're proofing by leaning down to tie your shoe. You're throwing treats out, and your dog's not moving because they know that they can't get off the place. Then what you do is you say, okay, time for the big thing. We do that for a week. We nail it. You do place. You let the dog pass. So that's the first step. This is just in your case. This is the first step of the process of if the dog breaks the place, we're correcting him for something he knows why he's being punished. So it makes it very, very clear. A. He knows exactly why the punishment is happening and how to stop it, right? And B, it makes it sustainable to give you an opportunity to figure out where your dog's reaction is coming from. Because oftentimes dogs who react are just out of control on every level. They have a disconnect with their owner. They're physically not in control, so they're in front of them the whole time. Like if you look at my videos, if you just scrub through them and look at my videos, if you want, like the first 5 minutes of all my videos are a dog out of control. They don't know down, they don't know sit, the dog pulling, they're all over the place, the dog isn't engaged, they're not looking at them, they could care less. So that's a product of not having a good communication, which then leads to a dog being fearful, which leads to a dog being insecure, which leads to reactivity. It also comes in different avenues too. It also comes with the dog just being like, I don't care, I'm going to do what I want. So my point is we put him into a place, we have his prong collar on, he goes into a place, you get right next to him to make it super easy. A dog walks by and he starts to react, inevitably walking off the place. We correct him for that. Boom, back into a place, which makes it fair for us to correct him, but also empowers him to do something alternatively. Because oftentimes when a dog reacts, we kind of just say, no, don't stop. And they're like, okay, no, don't stop. I don't know any of those things. And we've never worked on those things. And if we have worked on those things, it's only been when I'm reacting at another dog in a very frantic state of mind. And it's not repeatable, right? We can't do it often.
Can I ask a quick question about the correction?
Yeah.
So up here, specifically in Quebec, prong collars are illegal. I didn't care, and I'll take whatever repercussions come my way if I ever get caught, because I know that that tool is what I need, or what I think I need to effectively communicate. corrected Brody to a point where he was like, oh shit, I shouldn't do this. I'm not a big guy. I'm like, I have like 15 pounds on my dog, maybe. And, you know, it's something that happened with the wiener dog when I almost got pulled down the stairs and they were walking with a stroller as well. I did give him a very solid correction, but in my mind, I overcorrected. I was very worried that my neighbors, if anyone saw that, they'd be like, holy shit, he's abusing his dog. He has a prong collar. He's correcting him. But my argument would be that I've never corrected him to the point where he's even made a sound or even yelped or like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. when you talk about correction, obviously I can be like, ah, 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 and give him a little flick of the wrist, which doesn't, the flick of the wrist is another thing I want to touch on, but what does that correction look like from your perspective? Is it a big enough flick or kind of pull to snap him out of it? Because I've never been able to snap him out of it.
Yes. It's big enough. Yes. It's big enough to snap him out of it. It's big enough to teach him sustainably what he did was wrong. And on the flip, I want to just tell you, I'm a professional dog lover, right? I've turned my passion and understanding for dogs into a career. And I've had several thousands of dogs through my hands. I've trained dogs and I've worked with owners in many, many, many countries that I've toured in. I have over a decade of information, you know, and this is, I'm saying this because I feel like I have an advantage with dog behavior because of those reasons, because not your average dog trainer gets those opportunities. And what you are paying for is my brain. So being able to travel the world and work with dog owners who don't even speak my language, where we have interpreters, and dogs that grew up in different parts of the world with different genetics, I can tell you that the objective of that correction, you have to understand, is the most sustainable thing that you can do to teach your dog through leadership of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. And the fact that your dog is a Great Dane, which is arguably the biggest.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dog breed in the world, your corrections are going to have to match what your dog can really even register, right? So that's really important to understand. You also, I think most importantly, which dog owners sometimes forget, I call them fake dog lovers, they forget that the opposite of a dog, in your case, let's say we didn't believe in corrections and or we just failed to correct a dog at that moment, the momentary bit of discomfort for your dog to a point of, oh man, that really sucked, but I'm not even going to vocalize, versus your dog getting a hold of the wiener dog next to the kid in a stroller, you decide. I'll put the wrath of Zeus, God, Buddha, Allah, and any other God in the world into my dog to make sure that they know sustainably, safely, and that they register that what they almost did or are about to do could be life or death for them and or a lawsuit for you or all of the above. So I want you to think about that in general as you're working with your 150-pound Great Dane that doesn't need to jump up on the counters to get anything. When you're trying to correct him or you are correcting him for things, you have to understand that the alternative is him making those really bad decisions. And I know that you understand this, and I know you're looking for validation, but I will continue to give you a couple other opportunities to put things into perspective for you. I have worked with dog owners who also don't believe in remote collars that have killed their dogs, essentially, because their dogs just get hit by cars. And, you know, that's a price that they've paid. And I don't want to be dark, and I'm not trying to scare you, obviously, because I have no benefit in swaying you in any direction of how you feel. I'm just here to help you. But again, because you're paying for my brain, you're also paying for my experiences. And I have had way too many experiences with dog owners who have unfortunately lost the lives of their dog because they've lacked the opportunity to assertively insert leadership when they were supposed to. So if my son started to walk, which we're working, he's running now at this point, right? He travels the world with me. He's one minute he's in New York City, the next minute he's in New Mexico, the next minute he's in Portugal, right? At any given month. And I'm saying this because it comes with chaos and stress in life, as any other parent, regardless of if they travel or they don't. But we, my team, our nanny, my wife, my in-laws, my mom, whatever, whoever's with us, make it very, very clear for him that the road is bad, cars are bad, and we have a couple different languages. We autos, right? So he speaks German sometimes. We speak in English. We make it very clear that the autos or the cars are danger, very dangerous. And if at any point he goes towards the curb, we let him know. We yell at him. We grab him. We pull him back. We say no. We say nine. We say all the things to help him understand that that is scary. He's never once been, you know, emotional about it. Although if he was, I wouldn't stop doing it. Would I care? Of course, because I'm human and I would feel bad if my son cried at my behalf. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to second guess punishing him verbally for going towards the curb, because it's the difference. It could be the unfortunate difference between life or potentially death for somebody I care about immensely. And so I'm not trying to go off the rails here, and I'm not trying to get dark. I'm just letting you know that I want you to really weigh the options from somebody who unfortunately has had way too many experiences with people who have already gone through these. Now, with you, it's not like that, but I'm just telling you, like, I always tell my staff when we hire new staff for our daycare or for our trainers or whatever, I say, in the dog world, professionally, it's a pretty cool job, and it's really great most of the time, but if it goes bad, it typically goes really bad. It's very binary. It's usually like, this is the best day ever. Okay, I'm in full panic. And so, because dogs really kind of offer this two-sided coin of like, oh, we're doing great, now we're not, right? So I think it's just important for you to realize that when you punish your dog and when you correct your dog, outside of unethical methods of getting that point across, right? Using a very expensive design tool to correct your dog on purpose, right? That the invention of the prong collar was to communicate safely to a dog so you don't hurt them and choke them, is to make them uncomfortable enough ethically so they don't do that again. And I wouldn't personally, again, this is me, I'm a dog lover too, I'm not just a professional. Like, you got to make it really clear that that's very inappropriate to do, because it's life or death, right? So think about it. Like, your Great Dane drags you. So first of all, they drag you down the stairs or the porch or whatever to then pretend, we don't know what he would have done. I mean, he could have went up to the wiener dog and sniffed him and you could have got him away. It doesn't matter. But who knows? In some parts of the world, in some parts of the country, they could have shot your dog in the head and it would have been over. Because, hey, I tell you what, if a Great Dane was lunging at me and my dog and my child was in between, I would do everything. I mean, I don't have guns, but I would do everything I could to protect my family. And it's scary, right? And I know that, so that's just a little bit on that. I want you to really remember, you know, that conversation when you're thinking about these things. But besides that, let's pack that away a little bit and think about what ends up happening if you sustainably, like if it works for you, you're then able, it just doesn't happen. So you say, leave it. And the dog goes, I remember what happened last time. I'm going to leave it, period. So just remember that if you're a leave it, which then comes enforced by a correction, and in this case, a prong collar correction, is effective, then it's going to be sustainable, which therefore you won't have to correct again physically. You just say, leave it, and the dog goes, got it. That's it. But oftentimes with dog owners, and this is like the million-dollar question, if you will, meaning 90% of dog owners with these very like non-genetic problems coming to me, non like super behavioral problems, is they have a problem with a dog and they've never told the dog no. And I just very eloquently tell them professionally, you've never told your dog no. And the reason why they're doing that over and over and over and over again, no matter how much time you spend with me, no matter how much money you spend on training, is because you've never told them that it's not okay to do, period. So that's what I would just say on all of that is could you overcorrect your dog? Sure. But dogs are, the benefit of correcting your dog to a point to them going, I never want to do that again, is the sustainability of just your words and the safety of your words. When you say leave it, the dog's like, okay. So when I tell my son danger and ought to and all that, he runs away from the road. Perfect. Good. But it's the sustainability where you just don't have to do that again. They start learning like, okay, that's bad behavior. But the cool thing is, and the flip side is, you also have an opportunity to then counter condition, right? So your dog's auto response at this point sees the dog, lunges and barks and all that stuff, right? Because he's getting away. He's enabled to do it. That's his response. We haven't really successfully knocked it off. We haven't like stopped him in his tracks, right? So you can't really teach him how to do anything other than that, right? So when he goes and we correct him and the dog is still in front of him, that's your opportunity when he's not reacting and he's looking to say, yes, good, leave it, and then start paying him. And that will release this kind of like aha moment for him, and he's going to go, holy crap, like this is a much better decision. And so it comes with this timing sequence. And if you watch me work with dogs, it's a quick process. I get a dog on a leash. I start working on basics. So oftentimes I do like what I call a red light, green light. So it's a calibration that I do with dogs. I walk forward. I say heel to them. And typically 90% of dogs living in the world right now have zero engagement with owners. They are attached to their owners. They love their owners, but they have no real deep understanding of one another. Unfortunately, it's just you're disconnected. You cuddle at night, you cuddle during the day, but when it's time for them to want to do something, you have no say, which is unhealthy. It's a terrible way to live, to be honest with you, because you can't talk, you can't communicate to your dog when you need to the most, right? So what I do is I put them on a leash, I put them on like a slip collar or something, depending on their size. I go heel and I walk forward and they go, whoo, and they just run past me and they try to pull me and break my back and all that stuff. And I just, the moment they step their legs past my foot, I correct them. I go, boom. And they look at me and they go, what? And then I immediately start moving forward again. I don't give them an opportunity to get emotional or anything about it. They just go, holy. And I just keep moving. And then I do an inside turn. And then I go back the other way. And then all of a sudden the means something, right? There's hundreds of documentation videos on this, right? I start going, and the dog, I don't use my leash. The dog stops in their track, takes a step back and looks at me. And I go, yes, boom. And I pay him. Good. and I go forward again, and then I drop the leash, and then I put my hands behind my back, and I start doing this, what they call this dog whispering type thing, and all I'm doing is the easiest thing that anybody can do is just set a clear boundary.
Right.
I move forward, they go whoop, heel, whoop, heel, whoop, and they just stay in this spot. Then what we, and the dog owners are like, whoa, holy crap. And I'm like, I'm not, you know, it looks this like this voodoo stuff, right? But it's not. I'm just setting a clear boundary. So if you went outside your door right now and you stopped and your dog continued to move forward, that would be the part of like, I would tell you, I would say, hey man, just shelf the reactivity because that doesn't matter right now. And in fact, the cause of this reactivity could be right here in front of us. Like your dog is not engaged with you at all. They're making these wild decisions. It's the Wild West out here, right?
Right.
If you, engagement stems from obedience. Obedience stems from communication, which, so therefore, if we don't have good communications with our dogs, we put them on a piece of rope, we go outside and they want to react towards another wild animal, we don't have say because we don't practice say. We don't do this, right? It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It's like, it's crazy. And it's interesting because to me, I watch it and I observe it. When I'm out in public, I'm watching how dogs are with humans. I never say anything because that's not my thing. I don't care about that. I'm just like observant of these things. Like when I go out for these free dog training type things that we do sometimes in parks randomly, I just watch these people just getting dragged and pulled and lunged on harnesses. And I don't care what they're on. It's just like this. I'm like, oh my God. And it sucks because the dog owners love their dogs. Their dog loves them, but they're so disconnected on an emotional state. Like if the dog owner said, come, the dog would be like, yeah, right. Look at these Canadian geese. Look at these squirrels. I am gone. And they take off. Like dare drop. I dare you to drop your leash in a park with your dog. Your dog is gone. Right.
Yeah.
So my job isn't to make you feel bad. My job is to just let you know that it doesn't have to be like that. And that's likely the cause to your other problems, right? It's this, your symptoms, reaction, barking out the door, barking out the car, barking at the window. Those are symptoms of something else, right? So you have to, and okay, what is it? You have to matter to your dog. So when you say, Brody, leave it, and he just barks through it. He's like, no, stop, what, stop talking. Like, I am busy barking. Like, you should really matter to your dog. And I think that that's important, that a lot of people do not matter to their dog. So it starts with that foundation. So you,
right.
So you go outside of your house.
No, this all makes a lot of sense. And
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's very insightful. And I know that foundation is so important. And I think that that's a good place to start. I have just a question about when to correct. So we're walking down the street. He sees a dog in the distance and he beefs up. He's still listening to me. He's still in a relatively good heel. Do I correct at the point when I can no longer get his attention? Or do I correct when the explosion happens?
To me, in my experience, what's been more helpful is counter with obedience. Because then the reaction never happens. So if you put him into a heel and he's walking forward, that's your first line of defense. Because I would say 50% of the times dogs don't react when they're walking perfectly. They will lunge forward and they will break their heel. So it starts there. And if he does, then there's a lot of things. So there's a lot of things that you can go into to help with this. My reactivity course is helpful for showing you exactly what these things are. But you correct him even before that point because he's broken his heel. Like don't go out and have him 2 feet ahead of you and just wait for him to react. You should be doing,
right.
You should be doing, because a dog that's misbehaving has too much freedom. Don't let a dog that makes bad decisions to do whatever they want. That's rewarding bad behavior. We need to tune that up. We need to put structure into that.
So when he breaks that heel verbally, is it the simple and I expect him to know that's back in a heel, or do I give a little correction and say heel again? Am I desensitizing him to the word heel if he keeps on breaking it and I keep on asking him to do it, if that makes sense?
I'm going to answer this as he knows heel well, because it's more a little bit more complex than yes or no. So if he knows heel well, you would just correct him and use your ah. But your ah is a corrective, what I call corrective marker, that needs to be enforced. Once it's enforced, it means something. Okay? So you're going 70 miles per hour in a 30 and you see a cop. You're immediately going to slow down, because you know that that cop could enforce the law. That means, right? So when you say ah, that means that it's going to be enforced, okay? But he has to learn that in the beginning. So in the beginning, when you're out for a heel, and you're going to pair them at the same time. So let a dog, when you say walk to your dog, they know what that is. When you open a bag of chips, they know what that is. When you get your leash, they know what that is. Why? That's conditioning. That means that this plus this equals this. So we do at correction at the same time. So he knows what at means. He goes, "Hey, you're crossing that line. You're warning, warning, warning." That's what that is. So you do that a couple times. At correction, at correction, at corrections. That way, when you go forward and he crosses you, at, and the dog will go whoo, and walk backwards. They go, "Oop, my bad."
Would I then, in that same scenario, dog in the distance walking towards, he breaks his heel, would I use that chance for obedience to turn around because I know we're not at that point where we can effectively pass a dog? Do I use that obedience to get his attention to turn around, keep his focus on me, and then slowly kind of narrow that gap or close that gap?
You would incrementally narrow that gap, because you're, and it's only because your obedience isn't there yet, right? Yeah, we could take the low-hanging fruit and say he's not ready for it yet, but the reality is your obedience as a dog dad is not there yet. Like, his fundamental understanding of what he needs yet, because as your obedience gets better, you should be able to walk by anything. That's what obedience is. I put my dog in a place and I throw the circus at him and he stays, because that's what a good obedience is. He gets up because he sees a lion, and I'm like, "Oh, that's my fault." Right? So yes. Also too, like doing the in, like I have a whole, like in my reactivity course, I have a what I call a dismantlement exercise. So it's like the inside turn, the outside turn, and the drawback. So that th those are all precision based things that we do for a reason, right? They're done on a reason, right? So we go out with him, he crosses at correction, bang, he's back into position, the dog's approaching, I do an inside turn. Now his head, because his eyes are going to load him up. If he can't see the dog, he likely won't load, very likely, right? So he crosses that line, we correct him back, he goes, "Holy crap," we do an inside turn, boom, it immediately drops his build. And then you start working, and then you go back, and you basically are, it's like getting into a hot tub or a cold plunge. Like, for, you know, you just, for hot tub in general, like you get in like really slowly and you don't just jump in because it's uncomfortable, right? So that's kind of like the idea here, is you're trying to do things incrementally and teach him slowly throughout that process. And
So
that's important.
I did sign up for the reactivity to neutral course that you offer online, and I made my way about halfway through it a month or so ago. But I felt like I just wasn't in the right mindset to really address and give the attention that it needed. So that's something that I can definitely go back and review and memorize. Just in the last couple minutes, because I obviously want to respect your time. If at this point I haven't corrected my dog to the point where he's been like, I shouldn't do that, at what point do you recommend an e-collar?
When you feel like the correction you're giving doesn't matter to the dog, is when the e-collar would come in, which is very common for larger dogs. And even the pager, which is the vibration, is really helpful for that reaction. But in your case, that's all that would come in.
I think that I just don't want to confuse myself or risk any backtracking and progress or like kind of with the dog, just knowing that it's a new tool. And obviously, it's all on me. I recognize that this is all on me and not the dog.
Let me put it into a perspective for you to see if this helps. So let's say you're out with him in a non-distracted environment and he knows his heel well. He respects your He respects like, oops, my bad, better get back into place. Then you go out into a realistic environment and he sees a dog and everything falls to shit because when you punish him, the accountability just doesn't matter to him. That's where you amped up your accountability. You just move, because that happens, so many times. Does that happen, right? The dog's like you said, in the scatter feeding process, like I'm choosing this motive over, it's pleasure over pain, right? He's like, this is way more valuable than the correction you're giving, and I'll push through this all day. And that's where the e-collar comes in, because the vibration of the remote collar, even the stimulation when you get into it, has a huge spectrum, and it's very, very, very effective. That's why you'll see, like, there's one video I did with a Tibetan Mastiff where we had this disabled older gentleman got this Tibetan Mastiff, which I personally don't think any normal dog owner should just have one of those dogs. He did. And he physically couldn't handle the dog, even though if the dog was happy and aggressive or friendly, he couldn't handle the dog. And he wasn't. He was mean and aggressive, and he didn't want anybody near him. So outside of euthanizing the dog, I mean, we really didn't have a lot of options here. So we used the vibration, and it completely stopped his reactivity at that moment. And yeah, I don't know what this guy did when he got home and whatever, but I'm just letting you know, like, that weekend, boom, it was gone. Because we used the vibration, because it mattered to the dog, right? It was the first time he was like, oh shit, I'm not going to push past this. And it mattered to the dog, which is, it's very real if you think about it. Like, don't overthink the aspect of this. If we have a dog that's like, I'm choosing this to do, and you don't have anything to disrupt that effectively, they're going to continue to push past whatever you say, period. Like a kid eating candy. You're sitting there going, no. Like if I, like my son, he's potty training, and I had these little M&Ms next to the potty, and if I let him eat the whole thing and I'm just sitting behind him going, no, he's eating the whole bag, 100%. Like, so it's the same thing with your dog. So the answer is the e-collar is going to come into time when your corrections are ineffective and do not matter. So the accountability and or punishment that you're applying to the dog's well-known behaviors that he's blowing you past, that's when that comes in.
Okay. I mean, that's answering the question. I think that just given everything we've chatted about today, I feel confident in giving what I'm doing today at another, like at the next level, a shot with the prong collar to see if there's any progress that I can make. Mm-hmm. But I do think that that next step is very close. I saw your videos about the e-collar training, and one of them was a Mastiff that you worked on offsite, and you went to someone's house, and that e-collar, those situations that that dog was put in is very similar to how I feel the situations I'm put in or my dog is put in is. So I feel like that is the next step. So that's good.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And then I would just say the in-between work, the low hanging fruit, easy work that you can do too, is you can sign up for my student portal, which is you sending me footage of you working. And I mean, obviously you don't live super far. Like some people live in like Japan. It's like, okay, you could work with me, I guess, but it's a lot harder than we're connected, at least our country. So I think for you, my point is the easier route, I think at the beginning and more efficient route, maybe you can sign up for that immediately and start working on sending me footage of you doing things, and I can start seeing if you're doing the right thing. Because oftentimes dog owners do that. They say, hey, I'm doing this, 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 and this. And on paper, like, okay, that sounds like you're doing the right thing, but almost every single time they're not doing it right, which is why they're failing, right? If you were doing everything right, you wouldn't be on the phone with me right now. So just let that be known too. If you're kind of like stressed about like, well, I have to go down and see Tom if this doesn't work. There is also something in between that where you could send me footage of you working, and then I can coach you through the process and see what you're doing as well. And that's also very effective.
No, that's super helpful. I'll definitely check out the site. The more that I think about it, today was amazing, and I really appreciate your time and just your energy towards this, because it's something that I've been struggling with for such a long time. But I think that coming to the facility might teach me and hold me accountable for what needs to be done here. So I think I might message your team back. I think that the next available session that I would be able to attend is the end of June. But I'm happy that we're able to connect just immediately, just so that I'm able to see what I can do over the next month and a half, 2 months. But I think that if I can't make much more progress on my own, I might just bite the bullet and come see you in person.
Yeah, that's super helpful. That's probably the
Cool.
most helpful that you can get, because it's a 3-day transformation process that every single dog that's ever come into that program was able to go into group class after. So it's pretty
I've
effective.
seen. Man, what you do is amazing. I appreciate everything that you post. I appreciate your content and just again your energy towards this.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right.
Okay.
Cool, man. Well, I'll let you do your thing. Again, really appreciate it. This has been great. I'll continue chatting with your team just about that in-person session when the time comes, and hopefully I get to meet you in person one day.
All right. Sounds good, man. Good luck.
Thanks, Tom. Have a
All right.
great night.
You too. Bye. All right, guys. First question comes from Marley Powell. Hi, Tom. I need your advice. My Malinois and my neighbor dogs do not get along or like each other. We have a fence separating our yards, but every single time my neighbor lets her dog out, immediately charges the fence looking to attack my dog, whether we're outside or not. I spend most of my days outside with my dog, and if I'm able to see the neighbor's dog before my Mal and I can recall her, but if she sees the neighbor's dog before I do, she'll charge the fence and they run up, down, try to bite each other at the fence. What should I do? Recall. I have your, so that's what I said, recall. I have your e-collar and use it to correct her for charging the fence. Ignore my recall. After ignore my recall, but she does not care no matter how high I turn it up. Put your long line back on the dog and work on your recall. This means that your recall isn't good enough. So you are actually putting your dog into a situation that you're not prepared for. Anytime somebody says that my dog doesn't do X, that means that your dog doesn't know it well enough. Period. You haven't worked on it well enough. Your dog's not recalling because your recall is not that good, unless your dog would come back. So hopefully that's helpful, Mary or Marley Powell. Good luck. Next one comes from Evan Dog Owner. Hi, Tom. I love your podcast. It's been very informative for me. I just got an Australian Shepherd. Fairly obedient, so trying to be potty trained. What should I do to train her to do? In order, oh, potty training? Well, hey, listen, Evan the Dog Owner. I actually just put out, I'm not trying to deflect you from the podcast, but I actually have a very good in-depth 4K absolute video for you that I just put on YouTube on how to potty train your puppy or how to potty train any dog. And it's called How to Potty Train Your Dog in 4 Days, my 10-week-old puppy. Go check it out. That's way better than me just ranting about stuff I already put out for you. Check it out. That's going to be helpful. Next one comes from Sage Case, longtime listener. Wish it was socially acceptable to give your info to dog owners unsolicited. That's funny. Your recent episode on off-leash training got me to take our 4-year-old fixed 55-pound mix, Bowie, with me to our place in the mountains so I could do some training. He loves it here but hates riding in the car. He doesn't look forward to getting in the car but also doesn't protest. In a 2-hour drive, he pretty much stands the entire time panting and clearly anxious. Some deal with just driving around town. Same rather, we're most likely in a solid kennel and SUV. So question one, advice on a treat reduce car anxiety. Some dogs just don't like cars and they don't like car rides. Just like some people get sick on planes, some just like people get sick on boats and in the sea, some dogs do not like cars. And when they're in the back and in motion, my wife's one of them. She doesn't do well in helicopters. She doesn't do well on long drives. She's just one of those people. Can't do anything about it. Sucks. And that's the case. Like this isn't a training thing. This is a personality thing. So there's that. He knows place. He knows place. The problem is that he likes his place bed and will just go and lay on it down to relax. He basically puts himself in place and looks at me to say break as he's stuck there. Similarly, we put him into the place after we say break. He sometimes seems like he just wanted to stay. If we put him into place and say break, do we have to physically? No, you don't have to make him leave place. Break is an option. That's just like telling somebody like, okay, you're out of timeout, and they're like, I just want to hang out my room anyway. Okay, or hey, you can go. To recess instead of doing math. They're like, I like math. Okay, it's comfortable. Whatever. It's what you like. It's up to you. All right. Let's see. That's three of them. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We're just about out of questions, so make sure you head over to the iTunes review chart and leave your review, the question in the review, and I will likely answer it next episode because I think we only have two for next episode, which will come out soon. Apologize, I haven't been ripping these things out like I normally do. I've been absolutely crazy, but it's definitely on my mind, and obviously I'm at least doing once a week, but I usually like to chew twice. So thank you guys so much for listening. I truly do appreciate you, and we'll talk to you next episode. Bye.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.